What's up, pizzas? Corey Vincent here, and we have a special treat for you guys this weekend because we are going to release a little taste of what myself and Curtis Fisher have been working on. It's a new project. We've been calling it the Krakoa Cast, and it is based on the new Jonathan Hickman line of X-Men comics, House of X and Powers of X. And it's an insane book. It's a great reboot of the X-Men franchise. And there's been articles written all over the place about it. If you are interested in comics, even casually, this is definitely a series you are not going to want to miss. So, in honor of that, we are going to release this episode, which is episode 3 of the Krakoa Cast, which is all about issue number two of House of X. And basically, they did some insane, some crazy stuff in this book revolving a character that you might not suspect, and it really just kind of changed the way you can think about all X-Men comic books moving forward, and changes your perspective on a lot of X-Men stuff you've seen in the past. So we thought this was an extremely relevant book to feature, and we hope you guys enjoy it. If you guys want to hear more of it, like I said, you can get the episodes first in audio form on our Patreon, patreon.com/videogamebang, and then afterwards we upload them to our YouTube, youtube.com/thevideogamebang. Hope you guys had a great weekend. Enjoy the show.
Video game bang, video game bang, video game bang. Video game bang, video game bang, video game bang.
Hey, what's going on, y'all? It's your boy Skip, back from VGB, here with my man What's Up Pizzas. What's going on, Corey?
What's going on, Kurt? I'm glad to be back. Thanks for holding it down in that last episode.
Word. We are here ready to discuss this House of X number 2. So shout out to Oblivion Comics and Coffee for providing us with this book for review for you. But this is more than a review. We're going to go all the way in on this thing. It's going to be a little different from last time. We won't per se give you the blow by blow because we don't want to spoil it all. We want y'all to, you know, if you haven't yet, go and read it. But also, you know, we just want to hit hard on our favorite parts and kind of talk about what resonated with us and where we might think it's going. Because, Corey, I have a slight idea, but only a slight one. Do you feel like you have a pretty solid idea of where this is going?
I have no clue. So between what happened in the Powers of X and how they kind of split things up into the different like segments of time, and then kind of seeing this one, which was a callback to one we'd seen before, like scene for scene, but now we have the context. Mm-hmm. I feel like I have clear direction on the why of what we're seeing, but I have no clue on what this is going to take us to now in the future. But it definitely gave everything in this whole series the explanation I think I needed to see, like, why this is different from things we've seen in the past.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And because some of it kind of similar, I was like, okay, how is this going to tie in, and, you know, ultimately what's going to be the result of it and all that other stuff. But, and that's the key thing. Hickman is so detail oriented. Context is something that he plays with. And what's funny about context is context has a lot to do with time, which is something that Jonathan Hickman really likes to kind of muddle with a little bit. So we'll jump into it. So actually before we dive all the way in though, I want just in like 30 seconds, because you didn't get opportunity to be on the last one. What were your impressions of Powers of 10 before we jump into House of X 2?
That's one where I really needed an adult to hold my hand through it, because if you're listening to this or watching it for the first time, you'll know that I'm more of an X-Men Marvel comic book enthusiast and less of an expert. So it took a good 2 run-throughs for me to kind of understand who. Is this a new character? Should I know what that is? Where is that person coming from? Why are we looking at this? Should I know Nimrod? All this crazy stuff. But then about halfway through, when you start letting that stuff go, and I started just kind of reading the story for what it was and trying to enjoy it as a first time through, it really paints the picture of who the good guys are, who the bad guys are, and fills in like the very beginnings of motivation I thought it was really cool, the Mr. Sinister tie-ins and what ultimately ended up happening to him, which I thought was pretty telling of, you know, the Human Robo Alliance. I don't know what we're gonna what they're officially called at this point, but I enjoyed it, and I'm really stoked to learn more of these brand new characters that came out of these genetics programs.
Dope. Yeah, me too. That's something that I kind of talked about during it, how I liked that there was a Mr. Sinister tie-in, and I liked the consistency of Mr. Sinister trying real hard and then ultimately screwing things up really bad. So that was pretty interesting. I'm glad we both kind of took notice of that.
Well, what's cool is, like, in that first book too, like, we were seeing things, we're like, wow, Logan's smiling, you know, we got, you know, Ambassador Magneto, like, everything's perfect in the Marvel, I mean, in the mutant world. And then, you know, that scene even at the beginning with Mystique, when she's, you know, dropping off the files, and, you know, she still has self-interest and she's still so self-motivated. So it's not like everybody's under this magical spell where everything's perfect in their world. They still have their own motivations. Mr. Sinister's betrayal was another example of that. So while mutants are largely united and people kind of have the things they want, there are still those, you know, who have self-interest in mind and are not necessarily sold out for the cause. I thought that was kind of interesting too, contrast from book one.
Thank you, Jonathan Hickman, for writing this book. That's how I'm going to end my comment on Powers of 10. And then also, and what's so interesting about this is how they do tie in. So, right, Powers of 10, number one, the first page in there, we see, you know, Xavier, you know, 10 times zero, you know, year one, Xavier 10 times one, 10 years later. Xavier 10 times three, 100 years later, Xavier 10 times four, 1,000 years later. So, I was like, okay, now I get why it's different. One is House of X and one is Powers of 10. Okay, I get it. And then we get to this book and we get to Moira McTaggart. And out the gate, like, I'm more similar to you. I am more of an X-Men enthusiast than I am an expert because, because thanks. The doom, low hanging fruit, everyone. Because there was a large period of time when, like, the comics I wasn't really interested in, you know, even for, you know, the action and all that stuff. It just kind of had got a little muddled. So, you know, for my favorite writer to come back to this, to come to the series and take it over and make it his own is what really got me interested. But Moira McTaggart, with the very little information I knew about her, what I did know is she's never been known to be a mutant. Like, never. So when we, as we, you know, start off in Powers of 10 on that first page where it goes through the exponents and the 10 times 10, and then we get to the end, you know, well, a little bit in the beginning, like you mentioned, where it's like, okay, you know, hey, you know, yeah, you know me before, read my mind. And then, and that was the promo, like, for the book. It was like, this is the single most important scene in X-Men history right here. And it was that scene, but with no word bubbles.
Did you know from the offset who that was, that was Moira McTaggart whenever, cause that one kind of, I had no idea who she was. And so at the end of that, she says, you know, read my mind. Cause you know, obviously Professor X doesn't know who she is at that point either. So, were you able to tell based off of everything else in the context around it, who that was, or was it a reveal for you too in this book?
It was only a little bit of a reveal because I did process of elimination when I was looking at that. And I was like, the only person, because it's obviously not Jean and it's not Rogue, it's not anyone else. And I was like, the only other like ladies that he's linked to so hardcore, like there's three. There's Jean, there's Lilandra from the Shi'ar Empire, and there's Moira McTaggart. So I did process of elimination. I was like, that's obviously not Jean. And I was like, that's obviously not Lilandra because she's not a space alien with like long black sharp hair. I was like, that has to be Moira McTaggart. So let's say I was 85% sure. And then so when they validated it, it was still 15% of a reveal for me. But what was the big reveal is how they immediately launched into the fact that she's a mutant, like straight up. And her mutant ability isn't, you know, something that's so apparent to see. She's, you know, she reincarnates essentially.
It kind of like reincarnates, but it's like Groundhog's Day And it took me a few read through of those first few panels to understand exactly what was happening, because first I thought, you know, they painted the picture of her first life, mm-hmm. and then they go into like, okay, on her second life. And I thought it was going to pick up, like if she lived from the year 2000 to the year 2010 and mm-hmm. then died. And then I thought she would come back, you know, a baby in the year 2011 and then live the next life, you know?
Right.
But her version of reincarnation is she goes like basically back to the same point in time, correct? Like she's born over and over again.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it is essentially the effect is closer to Groundhog's Day where things get relived. But that's also to point something out, you know, to be transparent. Like, I love Jonathan Hickman, but that wasn't something that was just so easy. I mean, like the concept and like he told us what happened and, you know, like what the results were of her mutant ability. But like how that affects everybody else's continuity, he didn't dive into. So I'm going to put that as a point of criticism that it was a little bit of like, okay, what logic am I following? But luckily he's such a good storyteller, whereas most people, other writers may live or die on the crux of this concept, whereas Jonathan Hickman's like, it's just one part of the story. So the whole story doesn't fall apart just because of it. So we know that she can continually go back to certain places in time and then affect things differently. So it's closer to Groundhog's Day than just, you know, run-of-the-mill reincarnation.
Yeah, she would have to die to do it. And, like, we're so trained now that the multiverse is in everything that we watch. You know, we have Into the Spider-Verse, we have Infinity War, and they're all focused around the multiverse. So I just chalked it up to what I've been trained, and I'm thinking, mm-hmm. you know, every time she goes back and makes a new decision, that's its own divergent path of history.
Now they did say that like they are splintered timelines. So that part did get laid out. So I was like, okay, well, and that's what I mean. Like I'm sure if I sat down and I thought through it more, then I could be like, oh, okay, I completely get it. But I mean, he gave us enough to be like, okay, we understand the parameters and the confines. And I wouldn't be surprised if they double back, because that's the other thing I like about Jonathan Hickman. We're getting I think maybe a bit might be an understatement. We're getting nonlinear storytelling.
That's right.
We're not like just like Quentin Tarantino and Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown and, you know, Kill Bill. Like we're getting nonlinear storytelling. So Powers of 10 took us a few different places, the future, the present, somewhere in the middle. House of X seems to be, you know, more linear with some things double back. But between what we saw in Powers of 10, 1, and then House of X 2, that's nonlinear. And
this whole mm-hmm. even the first one, it what we've gotten in House of X is nonlinear, because the whole first one, the mm-hmm. basis, if we want to break down like the thread that tied the whole issue together, mm-hmm. it was the delegates with Magneto well past the time that Krakoa has been existing. And this this whole issue was in justifying why, you know, how Professor X got the idea, you know, and started going on with this Krakoa thing. So we're out of sequence already. And you're right. In Powers of X, that was my criticism, but mm-hmm. I don't want to call it a criticism yet, because it's got to manifest a little bit further. But my thought was, I don't like flash forwards because I feel like they're going to spoil things for me. So if mm-hmm. I already know how certain things are going to end, and then I know that this, you know, Nimrod is going to have this kind of dominance, and that they kind of basically spelled out what happens after that, you know? So unless this new...
Well, at least in one splintered storyline, they did.
Yeah, exactly. So now with this one, everything you saw in that one could have just been Moira's life number 9 or something, or 12 or 20. Like,
right.
So he just cracked this egg wide open, and he has free reign and creativity to do, like we said in the first one, like he justified... He basically has a Krakoa version of the Danger Room. You know, they have mm-hmm. a pocket version that you can't go to. They have a Krakoa cancer that you can use. And they have black mind telepathy. And
so you can't read. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's like, I think we're still just opening the Lego box and dumping them onto the floor. You know, everything we've seen so far is still like, we think it's big revelations, but this is probably all going to play into a much bigger timeline, because we're on 2 of 6. So we're still getting fed the basics.
And I will confirm, like, just knowing how Jonathan Hickman writes, I'll confirm that to you as someone who his most recent, biggest ongoing ensemble book is East of West, which is my favorite comic book. And Nick Dragotta is my favorite writer. I mean, my favorite artist. And Jonathan Hickman's my favorite writer, as I repeat, because he is. But like, I can tell you some of these same tropes and concepts he's used over there, not in the exact same way. But right when you think you know something and you think you know how it's going to end, he always turns it on its ear and flips it another way. And that's the fun thing about his toy box. Jonathan Hickman's toy box is kind of like, you remember Men in Black and that cat that had like the thing on it, you know, like they were looking for a galaxy and the whole time it was that tiny little marble on the cat's necklace.
Yeah,
that was the whole galaxy. That's what Jonathan Hickman's toy box is like. It's like a tiny car. It looks like it's so small, but then like 24 clowns walk out of it because he knows how to like pack things in, but still respect the space that he has to work in and that we have to read in. So that's what we get such quality stuff like this.
I gotta say too, like the mm-hmm. article, like I started, I was a little late to get this one. So I put in Oblivion is amazing. If you want to start picking up this comic, call your comic shop like now and get on the list, because like this book is already overselling what they expected. So if you sign up for your local comic shop now, they might not get you lit on the list and your comic shipped out for like an issue or two. And that's what I ended up getting caught in. I put in my reserve too late. I got lucky at the first one. I found it at just a rando comic shop in my area. And I thought, you know, and that's how I got Powers too, while I was waiting for my Oblivion to come through. And I needed to do it one more time for two, but it was so good. And it's picking up even more momentum as we go through. Every comic shop in my area was sold out. I was calling Barnes and Noble. I was trying to find it on Amazon, and Amazon wanted $18. And like, it's a sick book. So I finally broke down and bought my first digital comic. I downloaded the Marvel app. Used a little
guided view. Did you use guided view where you only see one panel at a time?
I did. I love
that. Look at that. See, but I swear, like people, like I get why people like physical comics. There's a reason why I still buy them and collect them. But I'm sorry. Like, here's the thing. I'm just going to be straight up. When they draw these things, they don't draw a whole page at a time. They draw a panel at a time because the artist focuses on creating the impact that the panel needs. So for us, it's almost like, you know how like they put blinders on things so you can't see everything else and you have to focus straight forward?
Yeah.
I love digital comics in the Comixology, DC, Image, and Marvel app because you block everything else out and now you focus on each panel. And I feel like you can absorb a little bit more.
I 100% agree. It was my first time experiencing a comic book that way. And a few times through, I would stop just because I feel like I'm lost a little bit reading it a panel at a time. And if you just double click on there, it shows you the whole thing. And you can see the whole thing in context, too.
Yep.
And it's like two different experiences.
Yep.
So it's fun reading through my first time. I did it through the guided view. And the second time, I wanted to go through just more leisurely to see if I missed things. And you can see things in the full scope. But reading it one panel at a time was amazing. Like,
What were you saying?
I was just, I talked to you before, like I just kind of had a thing against digital, but in the modern age, these things are, every one of them is, like you said, it's a piece of art. Every one of these panels should be like a wallpaper or something. Yeah. And they draw these at such high resolution. You could zoom in on the smallest of details.
Yeah,
you can just get everything. Like, look at the facial expression on this thing. No, like,
that's
no
incredible.
It's amazing. And you
and
know,
you're viewing that on a Retina display, which is beyond high definition.
Yeah, so it's just really cool. You can appreciate the art in just even a different way. I still really want to go find X-Men 2, and I hope I can find a first edition just so I could have the full collection. But you know, just learn, read up, and for the purposes of the show and everything, I'm never gonna, you know, turn an eye side eye towards anybody reading digital, because it's just it's the new way to read this stuff. It's cool.
It's comics superior, just like these mutants are Homo sapiens superior.
I've ascended.
You've ascended. Yeah. Corey times four. Here we go. 1,000 years from now. But what's funny is that this is topical. I'm going to keep it on the digital comics for a second because one of these issues, or and it might be towards the end or maybe the middle of the road of this series, but I want to go back because I don't know when you bought the comic, I don't know if you got the director's cut or not. But when you get the digital version, you can opt to get the director's cut. And with the director's cut, it has Jonathan Hickman's script in it. So some of the things that we're not sure about, like I haven't done it for Powers of 10, but for House of X, I went back through and I started reading the script, and it does fill in some of the things that we were a little like, huh? It's completely in there. Now, what else is cool, if you read Jonathan Hickman's stuff, especially Black Monday Murders, he full-on has things redacted that would... I'm not sure that they would be things that would obviously spoil later points, because Hickman, like, is a skeptic, and he likes to make you, like, have a little air of conspiracy. Did he redact these things on purpose, or did he redact them to make you think? He always keeps you on the edge of your seat like that. So, at some point in time, maybe if it's halfway through or if they take a break 1 week and there's a bye week, which they probably won't because they're getting this money, I want us to pick one of the scripts and read through it and then kind of do something, you know, like do a podcast after we've read one of the scripts.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Anywho, so on that,
through this book, what was the highlight for you?
Highlight
stick out
easily. I know what one of yours is, so I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to leave that one for you. One of the immediate highlights, like I said, was just the fact that Moira McTaggart is a mutant and has this reincarnation/Groundhog's Day ability, which splinters timelines, which totally lines up with her character in the past, her being like into archaeology and all that other stuff. So it's like she's already a person who studies the past, linked with someone who deals with people who come from the future. So for her to be the conduit was awesome. But there's a slight thing that Hickman did, and I like this better than everything else. The second that we saw that she had her mutant ability, most of the time when people have their mutant ability, we see them have some sort of success with it kind of off the bat. Well, she was failing like one after one. I love the fact when she like discovered Charles, got on the plane and the plane crashed so she didn't make it.
Yeah, I think that was I was thinking about that after the fact and like why, especially on the second read through, like why was that significant? And really, that's my first aha. I understand how her power works now. Mm-hmm. So she's on route to go do something, freak accident. Now I got to start all over. Because yep. I was still at that point not sure whether she was part of, you know, starting from her own birth or starting from a new birth and it was a new person. Like I didn't fully understand it, but that felt like educational almost and yep. tragic and kind of it was interesting.
Yep, very much. So that's my first highlight. What was one of yours?
I think my first highlight was I can't remember which life of hers it was, but you know, basically, you know, she discovers she has these powers on her second life, and mm-hmm. she's like, thinks, man, am I psycho? Like, what's going on? So she dedicates her life to studying, you know, psychology, and discovers the X gene, and starts thinking, well, maybe I'm a mutant, and maybe mm-hmm. there's a cure for this thing. And then so they kind of go through how she comes up with the cure in one of her lives, the cure, quote unquote. And right. she didn't have evil intentions. You know, it was like for people who want it. You know, and she kind of she saw Professor X and thought, oh, this guy's kind of a prick, you know, so I don't really want to rock with that guy. So I'm going to start, you know, doing this. Well, one of my favorite scenes is when she is captured by Mystique and Destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And they right off the bat, you know, you got this brand new ability. I'm still trying to process how it works. And then you right. mix them with a person who has another kind of strange ability that is basically a hard counter. If you play yeah. Magic the Gathering or any game where, you know, like, you know, water, like Pokemon, you know, if Moira's a fire type, this is water, because she could see right. every outcome of every life she's going to have and know where she's going to be at, what she's going to be doing, and stop it. So she yeah. basically lays down the law on Moira. She's like, listen, you don't even have that many lives left. I can tell you how many you got. And I'll tell you right now, you're going down the wrong path trying to end mutants. And if you continue to do it, I'm going to keep finding you. I'm going to kill you. And here, I'll show you how it's going to go down one time. Pyro comes out of nowhere and she's like, all right, burn her down, make it slow so that she remembers what this feels like. And that was like the toughest of love. And it worked. It was effective because after that life, Moira comes back and she's like, all right, I'm done with that. I'm
new plan.
Yeah, new plan. So I don't know. I just thought that was a super gangster scene. Extremely well drawn. Like when you just look at the Destiny figure, it's just ominous and intimidating.
So beautiful. Oh,
it was stone cold. I think you brought up already once in this Tarantino that I read it as a Tarantino scene, you know, like it had all the elements of tension and a huge, like, this is how it's going to be. And then a crazy kind of another tragic result. And so I thought that was up, as far as like the first act, was definitely my favorite scene.
I'm going to piggyback off of yours, because I think if we do three, that'll pretty much cover it. So my second one is, it piggybacks off of yours. What I like is that when she said how many lives she had left, or how many she'll get total, she's like, I don't see beyond 10. Moira kind of marked that in her mind. And like you said, she got more aggressive. So there was a time where she was an assassin and she went back and tried to eliminate all of the Trask family line, as Trask is the person who ultimately invented the Sentinels. So she tried to eliminate that. That didn't work. She ended up hooking up with...
Yeah. Put a pin there. Just sorry to cut you off. That was crazy. Because like that was a revelation, because everyone assumes that the Trask family invented the machines that would, you know, join the humans and take out mutants. But there's a line in there that said, like, you know, people were foolish to think they were just, the machines were dormant and always there the whole time. The Trask family had nothing to do with that. So when they were going to rise, they were going to rise regardless. I just thought that was scary.
Yeah. Oh, very scary. I mean, like, without saying it in my mind, I was like, oh, okay, Skynet. Next. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, 100%. So Hickman is so good at playing off of those things. But even throughout all that and the different lifestyle she had and how she got more and more desperate, ultimately, like I said, you know, in one life, in one of her lives, she hooked up with Magneto. And I don't mean in the intimate context. I mean, like, teamed up with Magneto to see if he could serve it through. And that had probably my favorite panel in it, with all of the, like, Avengers and X-Men leaping at Magneto trying to stop him. That was, like, a really, really good panel. But, and then got so desperate as to also team up with Apocalypse. And, and that was one of the variant covers. So when I saw that, I was like, is that Moira McTaggart with Apocalypse? Y'all got some splaining to do. And then Jonathan Hickman explained it. And I was like, okay, I'll never say you got explaining to do again, Jonathan Hickman.
Yeah.
ultimately what I was getting to is just, it's funny how Powers of 10 and Destiny straight up said, you have 10 lives, and there's no way for them to know or not. But right now, in the context of her finally approaching Professor Xavier, Charles Xavier, like this, it seems like she's on her 10th.
Yeah.
Which is the last one.
And it's kind of like almost going back to, you see her become more and more extreme. The word that they use is radical, which I liked. And then in this one, which justifies the entire House of X, basically, is that she went through 10 lifetimes of different scenarios of trying all sorts of different things, partnering with Professor X, doing it the way she thought was best first, trying Magneto, trying just murdering everybody, trying with Apocalypse as a Hail Mary. None of it's working. So this time she goes to a 17-year-old Professor X, I believe, a young man Professor X, and says, just read my mind and let's do this. Like, let's hammer it out. Here's everything I know. Let's start a whole brand new, you know, attempt at it. And that's what we know as House of X. It's Charles Xavier equipped with the knowledge of 10 Moira McTaggart lifetimes, or 9.
This is crazy. Well, no, technically 10 as far as up until that point, because he could still read her mind for everything. So, yeah, I mean, this is and remember, it's so funny how I kept saying, power. Remember when I did the first review when we were live at the fair, and I was like, power, the X-Men have their power back. And then Powers of 10, I mean, then House of X, you know, and everybody reads it and everybody says the same thing. When I did a panel for Thinking Critical, which is my favorite comic book YouTuber, and he invited me on there, and I said Power, and everybody else was like, yeah, Power, whether they liked it or not, they were like, they ain't backing down, they got a position of power. So it's so funny reading Powers of 10 and then realizing, okay, so this has to do with like exponentially, you know, like 10 times 10 times 10. Okay, so the time that we're dealing with ultimately will multiply, but then when she comes and we find she has 10 lifetimes, so this is the power of Moira, of 10 lifetimes of information of Moira McTaggart, and then she is not the conduit, she is not the doer, she lets Charles just take the information and then sits back to see what he does with that power.
Yeah. Dang. It's so significant in so many ways. That's crazy. I wasn't even thinking of it mathematically. Oh, that's
bro, yeah, I'm really good. Corey, you said you're ready for East to West. Once this is over, I'm gonna take you there. Anyway, what was your last one?
Before I get there, I just want to go back because I found the panel. Okay. This was the, like, to me, one of the scariest things a person could write in the book, but it says artificial intelligence is like a fire. It's a discovery, not an invention. All she succeeded in doing was stopping a Trask from being the first human to burn their hand. Holy shit. So it's like she, you know, was thinking Trask invented artificial intelligence, but it was there the whole time. He just discovered it. That was terrible.
And let me piggyback off of that real quick, literally for 20 seconds. The very last main page before we get to the graphic that shows Moira McTaggart's lifetime lines is her quote. I am here. I have always been here. Yeah. And it's what's funny is that it says Moira X, not Moira McTaggart.
So Moira
10. Yeah. Oh, the 10th Moira.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
We're having a podcast and we're discovering new stuff. All right, that's on you, bro. You go. Your last one.
I think my last part, because I think for me we covered all the story beats, but I just really loved the montage of seeing the lives and seeing artwork and things that we've seen in past panels and books, like with new information and light. Like when they called, when they were kind of going through the different phases of X-Men. And they did like, you know, through the gifted years and had all the old school costumes. And then through the time of hate and fear with like the old comic book, like I think the good years for me. And then through the lost decade and had all of the when they all got infected with the Phoenix Force in the X-Men versus Avengers comic line. And then even just going through and seeing like all the Avengers pop up through a panel. Which was that like a nod to the Ultimate Universe when House of M, or
I believe it was, because that's kind of the like the biggest story. Like I'm thinking because the other thing that links it, someone else, I think it was Sergeant Bats, brought this up in the Thinking Critical panel, is that the lettering ties to the Ultimate Universe. So I think along with the lettering, that is another kind of nod to the Ultimate Universe. And I think since she's lived so many lifetimes and since they splinter, I think one of the ones she lived through was an Ultimate Universe timeline.
Yeah, that's what I kind of got the vibe for, because she, you know, she says, I went and I, you know, pleaded to Magneto and Magneto was raged. And then the very next panel, it shows him like dropping bombs on the White House. And then you see like Thor and Hulk and Spider-Man all fighting Magneto. And the only time that I was able to remember that as being like a pretty big significant storyline was that Ultimate Universe. And then of course you get to see the amazing panels of Apocalypse fighting Nimrod and, you know, the, what do they call it? The Endless War or something like that. So I think just the artwork and just the things you get to see drawn out in that last part was my favorite.
Absolutely. I agree. Like what you touched on, that was my favorite panel, when everybody was going towards Magneto and he had those two ballistic missiles, you know, hurling down. It was incredible, man. But this is only House of X 2, number 2. Yeah. We still have 4 more of these and 5 more of Powers of 10. Like, so Corey, to cap it off, where do you see this? Where do you see this going?
So I honestly don't know. We're now in between so many different timelines, and I guess more information on how we got to Krakoa. Like, I want to know what happened immediately after Professor X learned, you know, Moira 10's information.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to see the light switch moment or more of his rationale between what Magneto said in issue one, because we haven't really gone back to that motivation yet where he says you have the new gods, or, you know, you have new gods now. So, like, that was super ominous and pretty telling of, you know, where their head is at and how they're approaching human relations. But I want to know why how he got there, you know,
like, right.
Why does he think being their gods is going to be the answer? And what's, you know, so I just want to see a little bit more of, like, right this time period after he reads Moira's mind.
Absolutely. Makes sense. Where I see it going, I feel like I had more of a clue immediately after I read it. The only thing that kind of makes sense to me, you know what? I feel like I'm totally clueless now. This is not the first time. But if you want to be clueless with any writer, you want to be clueless with Jonathan Hickman. This is a master storyteller. You don't need to see what's around the corner. This is the guy that you just trust, you just nod, and you walk out on blind faith, and you will get rewarded for your blind faith. He will give you vision. He will give you sight. He will bring light.
Yeah.
He will bring darkness with it, and he will give you one of the most spectacular stories that you've ever experienced in your life if you're just willing to commit to the story, grab your issues. This is a story to commit to. There's a reason why this is, in my personal opinion, the best comic book out right now. And it sounds like that's resounding with the rest of everybody, because they're in second printings already, like, immediately the week after a book comes out. It's unprecedented. So that's thanks wild. Again. It's wild, bro. Like, yeah. I'm telling you, this is unheard of. You don't hear about this with every new comic. The Batman comic book by Tom King, and everybody knows Brian Michael Bendis and Tom King. I'm like, But that's not even happening with them. They're losing readers as this can't produce enough books for people.
I think another interesting thing, a hurdle that I want to see crossed is, you know, the tension that we got to see between the Fantastic Four and Cyclops. I want to see that manifest a little bit more, because this still does take place in the larger Marvel continuity, obviously. So we do have guys like Thor and Captain America and Nick Fury and all these dudes out there who, when this story, you know, is bubbling up and getting huge, these guys are going to have a say in all this too. And, like, is Captain America going to kneel to the god of Xavier? Like, I highly doubt it, you know. So I don't want to see this become, you know, necessarily an Avengers thing and crossover with everybody, but I'm curious to see. Like, they've already introduced the Fantastic Four as characters in this story, so I'm assuming we're going to see them again, you know, when we're figuring out either what's going on with Sabretooth, or, you know, they're going to have something to say about this. So there's just going to be a lot of conflict. I want to see that stuff kind of shake out.
Hey, Sue, tell your son when he's ready, he's got a family in Krakoa waiting for him.
Yeah.
Two mutates, Sue Storm, Reed Richards, they're mutates because they went through an event that mutated them. They weren't born that way. They got together and they had kids, and their son is a mutant. He was born that way. He did not go through an occurrence. So you will see the manifestation of that.
And in as far as they're concerned, he is an Omega level mutant, and that's their most precious resource, as they said in that book. That's what they're there to protect, is the 10 Omega level mutants that they have, and that's one of them. So that no matter what, they're going to be watching him.
Wait, Corey, how many Omega level mutants did they have?
X number,
and that's a Roman numeral for
10.
And that, everybody, is Krakoa Cast number 3. Thank you so much for joining us. What's Mr. What's Up Pieces himself, Corey Vincent. You know where to find him. Video Game Bang Wednesdays and Saturdays. Me, Mr. Skip Matosh himself, you will find me here every week. And then obviously you will see the reviews for comics that I do. I'm going to have to start adding additional comics for Oblivion Comics and Coffee, because House of X and Powers of 10 are basically just going to consume my whole reading if I don't put something else on the list.
Yeah.
So expect different stuff.
It's got me picking up more comics already. Like, I got the Comixology free trial right now, so I'm reading through like Spider-Man stuff, and it's just been a lot of fun. So it's really cool. You know, I'm hoping that I'm just one of, you know, hopefully thousands that are, you know, getting back into comics and kind of reigniting that passion, because, you know, they have been kind of, you know, lackluster. In, you know, you don't get a series like this all the time, and so it's been incredibly fun. I look forward to Wednesdays now like I would look forward to Game of Thrones coming up on Sunday. Like, I cannot wait to get to the comic shop to grab this fucking book, and I've never felt that way about a comic book before.
You said Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
I'm going to say it one more time. East of West. I'm going to say it one more time. That's all I got to say. All right, y'all. We got to wrap it up. Thanks so much for joining us again. Check out Video Game Bang, video game_bang on Twitch. And we'll have more stuff for you coming out there. Oh, and check me playing Marvel Ultimate Alliance Black Order there, too, because I played a little bit the other night, just a quick stream. And I'll be playing more because I just got my new 8-bit Do controller. So I'll definitely be playing more.
You got the new one.
You know I did. I got that plus. But what happens when you turn a plus diagonal?
All right, now you're just reaching, dude. Now, bye. Okay, end it. Turn it off.